From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM, emerging artist bumper music for the first couple hours tonight. And then later on tonight, you might die tomorrow, so live today. Here's what's happening. Talk about prophetic. A 1981 novel by author Dean Koontz, who's been on our program several times, predicted the coronavirus outbreak. Buried in the book, The Eyes of Darkness, which resolves and revolves around a grieving mother investigating the mysterious circumstances of her son's death, is a very peculiar reference to a killer virus known as, this is in the book now, Wuhan 400. Now, that's the name of the city where the coronavirus originated. A Chinese scientist defecting to the United States carrying a disket record of China's most important and dangerous new biological weapons in a decade in the book. That's amazing. We're going to try to get Dean on the program briefly in the next week just to get his reaction to that. A second coronavirus death has now been confirmed in the state of Washington. The Seattle and King County officials said four additional cases of this coronavirus have been confirmed. It now brings the number in the state of Washington to 12. At least 40 people in Rhode Island are being monitored after the state confirmed the first case of the coronavirus. The Rhode Island Health Department said that a man in his 40s recently had returned home after a trip to Italy, where cases of the coronavirus have skyrocketed in recent months. Elsewhere over the weekend, of course, Illinois picked up a couple as well. I want to put things in perspective, though, because people are panicking all over this planet. And this thing is not out of control by any means. The average flu just in the United States, they've updated some records, kills up to 49,000 people a year. Just a regular flu. We've had just a few fatalities, sadly, of course. Fatal car accidents in the United States in a year. 32,400 people die in fatal car accidents. Dying from falling. 17,000 people a year die. Can you believe that? And murders in this country every year average about 15,400 people died. They were murdered every year, just to put that in perspective. It's a virus. It's dangerous. It's got a higher mortality rate than most. But it is not nearly what's been going on for years here. Just in the United States. Now, in Asia this morning, stocks plummeted as investors were rattled by weekend data from China that showed its fastest ever contraction in factory activity, raising fears of a global recession from the coronavirus there. Investment analyst Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, what's your take on what's going to happen this week here?
Well, George, we have a couple of things. You know, it's almost a perfect storm that's bringing in a correction in the stock market and the financial markets. Money sort of going risk off and going to safety. But I would say whatever the coronavirus is, you know, the fear is much more dangerous than the virus.
Yes.
So, but we also have Fed pulling money out of the repo market. And it's exactly what they did before the financial crisis. And, you know, so they appear to be taking away the punch bowl. So there's a combination of forces, but I think the most important thing to understand is we have a lot of different interests globally who are sort of emerging into a win-lose position. Coming out of the China trade talks, there's a real buildup of win-lose attitudes between institutions, between the United States and China, and the competition is turning mean. So, you know, to a certain extent, I think you've got very significant economic warfare going on in the planet. And the coronavirus sort of provides an air cover story to it. As you pointed out, traffic accidents are far more dangerous. And the flu, if you look at the statistics on an annual flu so far, you know, clearly something went on in China. But globally, you know, I'm in Europe and everybody's complaining about the shriek-o-meter just keeps acting like things are terrible. And everybody's saying, you know, there's nothing going on.
It's unbelievable. When you were on hold, did you hear my Dean Koontz story about 1981 in his book? That's unbelievable.
Isn't that unbelievable? It's, you know, it is unbelievable. I've seen that sort of rocket around the internet. But I just, you know, my feeling is that the fear quotient here is a lot more dangerous than, you know, the annual flu. There was one virologist in Milan said, you know, is everybody in a state of psychosis? This is no worse than an annual flu. So I don't know. I think the fear is the economic danger here.
I think you might be right. Catherine, thank you. Catherine Austin Fitz, her website, Solari, SOLARI.com. Freeman Dyson Jr., we've talked about him a lot on the program, a mathematical prodigy who left his mark on subatomic physics before turning to subjects like Earth's environment and extraterrestrial structures, has died at a hospital near Princeton, New Jersey. He was 96 years old. Even Oprah Winfrey takes a tumble from time to time. She's okay, but during an engagement for her Oprah's 2020 Vision, Your Life on Focus tour, the 66-year-old tripped and fell on stage while discussing achieving balance in her life. Over she went. She blames her shoes. Pete Buttigieg has ended his presidential campaign tonight in an abrupt and surprising pullout that further narrows the field to Democrats less than a month after he declared victory in the contested Iowa caucuses. Joe Biden got the win he needed Saturday night, resurrecting a Democratic White House bid that likely would have collapsed if the former vice president hadn't won South Carolina's first in the South presidential primary. And, of course, Super Tuesday, March 3rd coming up in a couple days, 14 states will vote, as well as Democrats abroad. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us here. John, Biden may have resurrected his career. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, that's certainly what he'd like to believe at this point. But and it may be true, actually, because part of the problem in the Democrat Party, as you know, is these superdelegates that are kind of lurking out there. I mean, they 4 years ago, the superdelegates got Bernie. It was a inside job at the DNC, and they sabotaged his campaign. Well, I think this, the same thing is underfoot right now. So even if Bernie, you know, does well on Super Tuesday, better than Biden, gets the lion's share of delegates and goes way up, the math involved in these delegates is such with the remaining candidates that no one is likely to get the 1,991 delegates necessary for an outright victory, which means that this thing is going, that it's going to be brokered, and somebody is going to get the lion's share of those superdelegates. Now, what that means is, and we've got some other people that are going to be dropping out very soon. Amy Klobuchar is polling almost
she's
nothing.
She's close. Warren, she's close
to dropping
out.
Elizabeth Warren that is the wheels have fallen off her campaign. So this is going to come down to a two-horse race between Biden and Sanders.
Well, I was going to ask you, though, John, is it possible we might get another Democrat at the convention that they select who we haven't even thought about yet?
George, it's always possible. It's extremely improbable. I mean, what's coming down right now is that Biden, that looked like he was on life support, won this South Carolina primary, about the same margin, by the way, that Bernie won in Nevada, about 46% to about 20%. And I think what is going to happen now is that you're going to see, you know, these delegates continue to pile up for Sanders on Super Tuesday. Biden will look to some future states like Michigan and Illinois, a number of other states where he can obtain some. But I think that the trappings are there right now for the DNC to kind of, and the party bosses, including the Clintons, to kind of decide who's going to get these superdelegates. And I think that's where this race is going to be won or lost. And I think the Democrat Party is going to have hell to pay in November if they deal from the bottom of the deck with Bernie Sanders and he's sabotaged for two election cycles in a row. I think the Sanders camp and all the voters connected with him will go away on Election Day, and I think they'll hand this election to Donald Trump in a very big way.
We'll watch it. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. SpaceX's new Starship prototype appeared to burst during a pressure test late Friday, rupturing under the glare of floodlights and in the midst of the company's South Texas facility. A separate video posted by NASASpaceflight.com shows that the midsection buckled during the test and shot upward before crashing back to the ground. It was not a good test at all. Up next, Midnight Strikes. Dan Holdings joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Wait till you hear what he has to say. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Dan Holdings with us. His latest book is called Midnight Strikes. Dan is an author, one-time radio host, former businessman, Air Force veteran. Thank you for that. He takes seldom heard truths and brings them to the forefront of discussion, changing paradigms wherever he goes. And this latest book, Midnight Strikes, is what we'll be talking about tonight. He'll also be speaking at Steve Quayle's 2020 Two True Legends Conference in Branson, Missouri this year. Dan, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this.
Thank you so much, George. It's great to talk with you. It's a pleasure to be on.
How long have you known Steve? Great guy.
Probably 10 years or so. You know, the funny thing is I started talking to him probably about 10 years ago. I was writing a fictional novel, as a matter of fact, and I needed a prepper character, and I was like, I don't really know much about prepping. So I thought, who do I know that really knows about prepping? Well, his name came up, and I contacted him, and he agreed to be a character in my fictional novel, and so we've been friends ever since.
Well, that's great. He was on our program last week and was talking about volcanoes and calamities and catastrophes and scared the living daylights out of us. And I have a feeling you're going to do the same thing.
Well, you know, George, I wish I could say I brought you warm fuzzies and all kinds of happy news. But the fact is that Midnight Strikes is a cacophony of catastrophism. And it doesn't bode well for mankind, and we need to talk about these things because I forget her last name, but the lady Catherine
Fitz, yeah.
Right. She used the phrase of a perfect storm in the economic world, and we are actually facing the perfect storm in the world. There are so many issues that are coming down the pike that people are just unaware of. You know, we go to work, we come home, we hug our kids, we might turn on the TV, but really, we're not aware of all the things that are going on. So Midnight Strikes actually takes into account all of those things, not all of them, obviously, but many of those things that people just aren't even aware of. And they're all happening, George, right now.
Oh, boy. Tell us about the title, Dan. How did you get it, and what does that mean?
Well, Midnight Strikes, you know, midnight is kind of like
sounds like the atomic clock.
It's mankind's clock. I got to be honest with your audience. You know, I look at the world through a biblical paradigm.
Okay.
And you know, that's not to say that this is a religious talk or a religious book, but the fact is that time is a finite thing. And we, you know, go about our lives not really looking at this biblical timeline that we are actually following the path of. And if you look at what's going on, it is exactly following a biblical timeline. But beyond that, beyond the discussion of religion and all that stuff, just the facts on the ground are mind-boggling.
Well, they sure are. And sometimes, you know, you wonder, are we in end times? A lot of people believe we are, and that's a scary thing all by itself, Daniel.
Well, it really is, and I happen to believe that we are in the end times, or at least entering into the end times. And, George, look, I'm not here to say, hey, you got 7 years or 3.5 years or however long. No. What I am saying is that we have entered into this time of tribulation, this time of trouble that the Bible talked about. And it talks about all kinds of stuff in the Bible. You know, we get so caught up on the religiousness of stuff, but it talks about all kinds of stuff that was going to happen during this time. And because it is, you know, it has to do with God and it has to do with religion, we look at it and we go, well, I don't want to talk about it because it's religious stuff. No, these are facts that are being played out in the history of humanity, and we're seeing them play out real time. And so Midnight Strikes is about those facts. Let me, I probably should tell you that,
You know, Steve Quayle wrote his last book. I think it was Jesus, the Premise of the Promise. And for those of you that know Steve's story, and again, I don't mean to sound religious, but I need to set this foundation for you so you understand.
Oh, yeah. He had an epiphany, didn't he?
More than epiphany, George. He saw, he got saved at a Hal Lindsey concert. I mean, a concert, conference, you know, late great planet Earth.
Yeah.
And so he got saved there, and he came home to his house, his mom's house, and he went into his bedroom, and physically standing before him was Jesus, right? Physically.
Whoa.
Not a vision, not a dream. And in this experience, he the Lord told him what he was going to do with Steve and all these other things that have guided his path through this whole life. Well, at the end of this experience, the Lord showed him a panoramic of mankind's future. And then he told him, you're going to forget about a bunch of these things, but I'm going to remind you when the time, you know, was just before these things are about to happen. And so, sure enough, Steve remembered some of those things, but many of those things he forgot. So fast forward to, you know, he wrote his last book. He says it's his last book.
It's last never going to be his last book. You know that.
No, he's got like 20-something books, so I doubt it. But he said it was his last book. And so, he started telling me some of these things that he remembered. And I started comparing them to the things that I've researched out and I've seen and I've studied as well. And I said, Steve, you have to tell people about these things. You gotta write another book. And he said, Daniel, I'm not going to write another book. I already said I wasn't going to write another book. I'm not led to write another book. I said, Steve, let me do this. You tell me what you saw, and I will write the book. And so Midnight Strikes are about, not totally about these things, but the 38 things that Steve listed out on this piece of paper for me. And what I did is, any good reporter does, I sat down with him, and we hashed out what he saw. Did you really see this? What evidence is there?
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did is I used those 38 points as a springboard to do some other investigative work. And what I found, George, was stunning. Not only are the things that Steve saw, and this book's not about Steve, it's not about, you know, those things. It's about everything that's coming down the pike.
Right.
So what I found was all of these things, were all of these things that were compiling one on top of another, that in without a biblical framework are just stunning. I mean, they are stunning because they're all on top of one another. That is what Midnight Strikes is about.
Dan, your website, of course, is your name, DanielHoldings.com. Makes it sound like you own a million companies, but that's your real last name, Holdings,
my
right?
My name, DanielHoldings.com, or Daniel Holdings, anyway.
Now, past civilizations have always thought they were in end times. What makes us different?
Well, you know, I use this word, cacophony, right? It is true that ancient civilizations have always looked to the stars. You look around, and you see many, there's ancient observatories that watch the sky. You have pictographs or drawings on rocks that show, you know, violence coming to the earth. You have stories. The Hopi Indians have all these stories about the things that have happened and the things that will happen. You have the Mayans that had this same kind of thing. What makes things different, George, this is a great question. What makes things different is the technology and the coalescence of everything that is coming together. But not only is it coming together all at the same time, it's coming together, and again, you know, some people aren't going to like this, but it's coming together as the Bible said it was going to come together.
Sadly, you're right. And should I say sadly? Because doesn't it have an enlightened ending eventually?
Well, there are some things that Steve shared at the end of our conversation. Because I asked the same question. You know, I wrote this book. It took almost, 10 months, 11 months to write. And there were times I walked away and I was going, man, this is so heavy. I mean, I had to step away and take a breather because it was so heavy. So I asked Steve the same question. I said, Steve, is there any good news? Give me some
good news. Yeah, give us something good here.
Well, look, you know, again, we're looking at a biblical framework.
Hold on for a second, Dan. We're already at a break, but we'll come back and talk more about your work. Midnight Strikes, several of his other books, 3 Days in the Belly of the Beast, As the Darkness Falls and Between the Veil. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Dan Holdings, our special guest tonight. Midnight Strikes is his latest book. Dan, we were talking about how past civilizations had thought they were in end times. What makes us different this time?
Well, you know, I mentioned that your previous guest was talking about the perfect storm that we're facing. There are so many things, George, that are because of the advent of technology. I sound like the Unabomber right now, but because of the advent of technology, we actually are facing all of these issues all at the same time. As an example, you know, the Chinese social credit system is something that the media has covered it from, you know, off and on for the last year and a half or so. And for those that don't know it, I'm sure your audience is well versed in this, but China actually keeps track of their citizens and rates them like a credit score.
Yes, I heard about that. That's crazy.
It is crazy, George, but what's crazier is that technology is being imported here to the United States. And when you look at the number of cameras, and we have technology now that if you're walking down the street, they can obviously carry, they can catch your conversations if you live in a big city. They have cameras that actually have sensors that can tell if, you know, what kind of mood you're in by the heat of your body and such. They have sensors that can, in some cases, even read your mind because of these very same biometrics. So they can track you according to not just your fingerprints, but according to your gait, according to how you hold your phone. So there's all of this that is being driven by artificial intelligence, and this is what China uses now, but that stuff is being put here. At the same time, we are entering this time where we're moving away from just the simple internet that you and I and everyone else have been around since the inception of the internet, to what's called the Internet of Things. You've had people on that have talked about 5G.
Yep.
This kind of thing is designed to handle the Internet of Things, because there are so many more devices that will be hooked up to the Internet. Now, interestingly enough, here's where the paradigm that we normally have about information technology and that sort of thing kind of meets this biblical timeline. I didn't know this until I did the research, but did you know that the World Wide Web actually started at CERN?
No, I didn't know that.
The very first website was at CERN on one of their servers back in, I think it was 1987 or something.
You mean Al Gore didn't do it?
Well, maybe his dad. I don't know.
Huh.
But it started at CERN. So since that time, we have had the World Wide Web grow all over the earth like a web. And you know, there have been prophets and men of God that have had these visions about, you know, a web encircling the earth. Okay, well, that's just Christian talk, right? Well, the Hopi have actually said the very same thing, and, you know, they're not necessarily Christian. So the point is that we see this web of technology that is wrapping the earth right now, and it's getting thicker and thicker and darker and darker. And what's happening is this Internet of Things will eventually hook everything up to the World Wide Web, and it gives the powers that be, if you will, the ability to track and to know exactly where you are, what you are doing, how much you are spending, what you have in your bank account, and any other numerous of things.
Yes.
How do we know this? Because they are doing the very same thing in China.
Yep, and they're getting away with it, too.
Well, not only are they getting away with it, George, you know, it started out as just one region of China, and, you know, it's going to be all over China here within the next year or so.
I want to get your take, Dan, on the coronavirus. I have that story from Dean Koontz's 1981 book called The Eyes of Darkness, where he talks about this kind of weapons-grade virus called the Wuhan 400. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. You can't make this stuff up.
Well, you know, the coronavirus is part of that perfect storm, and your guest Catherine said that it is a huge fear factor in this. I used to be in the financial arena, and I can tell you that she's absolutely right. Not that she needs my validation, but the fact is that the coronavirus, whether I happen to believe that it's a bioweapon, but beyond that, a bioweapon that leaked out of
that leaked. There was a mistake somewhere. Something happened.
Yeah, it was something. There were reports that it was a bioweapon that leaked out of a bioweapons lab. And what makes it different is that there's not an inoculation that you can get. You can't get immunized for this because it has a mutation cycle that is unbelievable. You can make,
By the time you get a vaccine, it'll change already.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why it's spreading the way that it's spreading. Now, George, you know, there was a story that was out just last week, actually the week before, that said that Wuhan rolled in. Now, get this. They rolled in 20 mobile incinerators, like these huge incinerators, into Wuhan to dispose of bodies. Now, people are dropping dead there. And, yes, that's China. But at the rate that – have you ever seen that movie Contagion?
Yes.
At the rate that that this thing is spreading, there's good reason to be concerned. I'm not talking about, you know, fear-mongering.
Well, see, I still think, Dan, the normal flu kills more people just in this country alone been happening.
It's a valid point because we're not there yet. Now, you wouldn't say that if you were in China. Because the coronavirus is far out.
I bet in China, if millions have died from the flu worldwide, 61,000, up to 61,000 in the U.S., they've kind of downgraded it to 49,000. It's still a lot of people. I'm wondering if China, all by itself, with the population it has, it must have 300,000 people die every year from the normal flu.
I mean, it could because they, you know, the Chinese, they don't let information out very well. But to your guest's earlier point, the fear factor is going to be crushing to the global economy.
And it's already started.
Well, it's already started. And, you know, she was talking about the repo market. The problem was that we've never really fixed the last, if I can use this phrase, the last financial contagion of 2007, 2008. The derivatives problem, we've just spread that problem throughout other banks throughout the world. Just, you know, a couple months ago, you had Deutsche Bank that was teetering. And you have Deutsche, you know, is one of those banks that are too big to fail.
Too big to fail, yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, what are they going to do if it goes under or if it sucks the life out of Germany and the rest of the world? Then, you know, it's going to lead to some other serious problems. So, but this is my point, that when you have the stock market, you know, it's a lagging indicator. When something is going on with the stock market, it's already happened in the real world. We have real issues, and this goes back to midnight strikes. We have real issues that we are dealing with right now. Last year, and I don't have to tell you about climate change, you know, global warming, you know, not really, but climate change, when we're looking at the flooding that we had last year, and when we're looking at the damage to planting and crops, George, there are so many farmers that didn't even plant last year because of all the flooding.
Yeah.
You have, you have livestock that was just eradicated by the flooding. I mean, it was the numbers that we lost last year were unbelievable, and we're still feeling the effects of those impacts now. But the problem is that the real effect, the real impact, we will not feel until spring and summer from those crops that should be, you know, coming to fruition. So what we are facing, at least on a food scale, is food shortages. Not, I'm not saying necessarily famine, but they certainly will lead to hyperinflation. Now, that's the problem. You have the coronavirus that is scaring, you know, people to death, and people aren't going to work, and they're not being as productive, and all this, these other things. At the same time, you have very real issues with other issues. So it is a perfect storm. Your guest is absolutely right. We are seeing the coronavirus, if it's a real concern, and I happen to believe that it is real, or if it's not a real concern, it doesn't even really matter. What matters is what people's response is. You cannot take away the fact that the Dow Jones lost, you know, whatever it lost.
Oh, my God, 3,000 points over the last several sessions. But
10% or something like that.
The world has gone crazy, though, with this. I mean, absolutely crazy, Dan.
Well, it's going crazy in lots of different ways, George. I mean, you know, your guests often talk about things that the world doesn't really pay such attention to. And I think you probably addressed this whole issue as one example. Did you know that the frequency that we normally, everybody has a frequency, this is just nature. It's the way that we are made. We operate, our brain operates on a certain frequency, harmonics, right? So the frequency has changed. I forget exactly what it was, but it's jumped all the way up to like 30 hertz or something like that. And what those changes do, it makes us crazy, and it actually has It's affected the magnetosphere as well. So you have physical reasons for people going crazy, and then you have other anecdotal issues like here's one for you, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this before, the Mandela effect, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, we've talked about that. And that's bizarre, too.
It is bizarre, and you can't really wrap your head around it. But, George, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. I never heard of such a thing until maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. So you have all of these little anecdotal pieces coming together to make people nuts. Well, okay, so that's, interesting talk. But you see that stuff manifesting on the streets around the world. You have the riots that have been going on in, South America. You have riots that have been going on in France. You have even, to some extent, social unrest here in the United States. But you have people, primarily young people, running out to the streets and rioting. Now, you could say that it's because of the disparity between the 1%, and I think this is a legitimate...
And social networking.
Yes, and social networking. So you have physical reasons for this, but you also have these other strange anecdotal reasons. And it's, how do you put a finger on the fact that the world is going crazy? You know, there was a time when you could have a civil debate about politics.
You can't do that anymore.
No,
it's argumentative. It's bitterness. I'll have somebody on who is pro-Trump. Then I'll have somebody on the next day who's anti-Trump, and I get accused of the opposite, depending on who's on.
Well, I'm going to help you out here, George, because I think the right wing and the left wing are two wings of the same bird, honestly.
Out to disrupt everything.
Well, I forget. I think it was Jefferson. It might have been Hamilton that said that warned against only having a two-party system because of this very issue.
Yep.
This is what we have. The choices that we have are so crazy. For one, okay,
and you can't win, by the way, when you
with that?
You can't win with whatever stance you take.
No, you can't. But it's part of, again, getting back to my earlier point, it's part of the time that we are in. It is that perfect storm. So where's all that leading to, though? I believe it's leading to a one-world government. I think we're going to see it.
Well, it's been heading that way for a long time, hasn't it?
Well, you have the UN that's just chomping at the bit to come into the United States and rescue us from ourselves. So it has been heading that way for a long time, but never before have you had the apparatus in order to install it. So I talked to you just a moment ago about the World Wide Web and the Internet and the technology that is in place to track everybody. It is the same mechanism, the bestial system, if you will, that the mark of the beast will come from. And again, I don't want to sound like, look, I love technology. I'm a gadget nut. But at the same time, I'm a realist. So you have the politics, polarizing politics, pushing people into this paradigm of, you know, we have all the answers for you and we're going to make your life better. And you have the technology that actually pushes you, because social media is driven this way, the Internet is driven this way. So you have this technology that's driving you in the same place. So I think that, again, that you're seeing the biblical paradigm play out on the world stage. The problem with that, you asked me earlier if there was any good news. I mean, there's good news. If you read the end of the book, it is good news. But it's good news for people that follow the Lord.
Don't want to give it away.
Well, I mean, not my book, the Bible I was talking about.
Oh, that one too. All right.
But it's good news for people that follow the Lord. It's not so good news for people that don't want to do what he says or don't want to live, you know, the way he tells us to live. That's just the way the Bible is. Like, you know, it's not me, it's the Bible. But the point is that we are looking at this perfect storm of all of these events, and technology and the coronavirus and the world's economy, they're all playing into that that timeline.
When we come back after the break, Dan, I want to ask you about the possibility of World War III. But are there things that we can do spiritually right now to prepare ourselves?
There's things that you can do spiritually and physically to prepare yourself. I think preparation is an excellent idea. And I don't think we have to just be caught unawares.
Because I think if you can handle this and weather the crisis, you're going to be okay. I've always been a believer in that.
Well, I think if you can feed your family and take care of your loved ones, then you're better off if you can't. So there are things that you can do on this side of these crises that you would do well to do for yourselves.
Dan, when we come back, I want to talk about the possibility of World War III, and then we'll open up the phone lines and take phone calls with our incredible listeners for you. Dan Holdings, our special guest. His latest book is called Midnight Strikes. His website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is his name, DanielHoldings.com.